Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Duran, and this is our brother from Down Under,
me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters,
filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports.
Hello, sports fans, and welcome to the very first episode of the Pro Sports Podcasters, where we will do our best to entertain and educate you on everything that's happening in the world of sports. And this weekend, that means UFC 257, the return of Conor McGregor in the rematch against Dustin Poirier. And we've asked Remco Pardue, a participant in UFC 2, his opinion on who will win the match, but more importantly, what's going on in the world of MMA. And let's get right into it with the Remco Pardue interview.
I was going to say, just looking at your profile, right, like you're, as far as I know, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it says you're a fourth degree black belt in jiu-jitsu, a black belt in judo, black belt in taekwondo, and a fourth degree black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Is there another type of martial art that you're potentially expanding to? Like, have you studied other types than just those four, or like those four just your main core?
No, I'm a second degree in traditional jiu-jitsu, don't get me wrong, so maybe there's a mix-up for that one. I always like to train boxing and kickboxing next to it, and I trained Fukuta karate with it, but I never, I teached three or four arts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, well, first, so I trained jiu-jitsu. I was the first one in Europe at Brazilian jiu-jitsu in 93, and well, some people like to debate about it, but yeah, show me the picture that somebody else was earlier, wasn't, and I have six Brazilians, which I like, have good names in the art, the sport, which can agree on that one, that they were the first, you know, and that's how it took off. Should it be a bit higher, but yeah, you know how it works. It's sometimes you have to wait a year or two or three. Well, if you add it up, then I waited a few years. It's fine. It is what it is.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, and furthermore, again, studying your career, you have a history of submission holds. Has that always been, like, since you were training at a young age, was that always kind of your go-to, or did somebody teach you that and you just kind of latched on being like, I like this? Or did you just know from, like, right away that you're like, ah, I want to tap people?
Well, I played judo since I was four and taekwondo since I was seven. Started judo like 11 or 12, like sports judo, sort of. But at this... Grappling, I did more competition judo because it's more common around, and it suited me better than taekwondo. Mm-hmm. Because it's a nice sport, but it didn't suit me that as judo did. So I bent it more to judo, and you know it's smart if you want to fight a tournament. It's smarter to go for submissions. You know, close in the distance, don't get hurt, take it to the ground, get your position right, and then try easily to finish up. That was also a strategy, sort of.
I like that. When I studied Goju-Ryu karate, so it was empty hand way.
I'm
a huge fan of submissions. Like, I love trying to find a way to apply it, but I don't know very many submissions. I got like a rear naked choke, I got an arm bar and a leg lock. Those are all I could do. That's like the only three I'm like decent at. So when you have a student come in who has a bit of background, so let's say me, for instance, like I fly over to Holland, I'm like, yo, teach me. Do you find it harder to teach somebody who has previous background experience, or do you find it easier?
At the end, it doesn't matter, because if my strength as a coach is I can analyze some person or it's like some art, sort of. And I think if you do the Goju, you're on the right end, because Goju is like the most expanded karate form, because you have soft, hard, forms, weapons, applications, defense. So it's, you know, for karate, it's I think it's one of the better arts, because everybody can find his style within Goju.
Yes.
But to answer the question, it's I rather work with persons. You know, if you're good at anything, I expose your weak spots, and then we're gonna train that one. So that's why I had people like, which are like really good stand-up, like Melvin, and just taught them how to survive. Same with some other guys in my gym. You know, they had really great stand-up and takedown. It's hard because you have to learn it year in, year out, you can't beat a wrestler within the 1 or 2 years.
That's right.
You can keep up with them for like a round, if you're lucky, maybe 3 minutes if you're lucky. But the second round, they dismantle you already, you're going down. So it's better to get yourself taken down, get yourself in a position, like I did Stefan Struve, for the guy which was much better and much more built for takedown. So I said, okay, you're going to take you down. That's fine. You're going to escape the hips. Grab the arm, put your leg around it, make the senkaku. It's like a classic Braulio Stima move, and he won a bonus of night with it. Just by thinking what is good for you, you know, and that's the most important thing.
I was actually, something I wanted to ask you specifically to the European market, because you're going to know much more than we do when it comes to that. Now, putting the effect of the COVID situation aside, because that's going to hurt all the markets, right?
Yeah.
But do you think MMA is growing in Europe, or is it like stagnant, or is there maybe a fall off on it?
It's not as fast as other territories.
Okay.
And I wanted to make a difference. I was busy with getting the UFC franchise to Holland.
Yeah.
Because UFC is a different brand. They approach them different standards. We can agree or disagree, but I think UFC adds value to the market, like CrossFit did in the past. You know, CrossFit added value to the market. And I think UFC gym is doing that also. You know, I have to thank Adam and Mike Apple, and I'm settling Mike Apple for having the patience and time to help me out. I had to cancel it at the 31st. Of last year, because the 1st of January, I was like head responsible. But the investor didn't show up with the money. So that was kind of bad start for 2021.
Yeah, you're left holding the bag, basically.
Yeah,
that's so. I cried a week or two, and then I came up with I want to create a platform for PT, small group training, and it's called Sensei at Home. And if I'm traveling to Canada and I want to have the best possible guy, strength conditioning or BJJ or MMA, I look at the app and I got to find one. Book a spot, there you go. And that's the basic idea. Next step is building content and creating content, because it's really hard to find the right content at the moment. There's so much noise. And, you know, maybe you don't like Roger Gracie, maybe you don't like Mendes, I don't know. That's free. It doesn't appeal to you. You don't buy it. They have good programs, but if you combine everything together and you make the clear programs, and you have like you can buy coaching sessions through them, online, offline, whatever helps. You know, that will be also very helpful.
Yeah, that makes total sense. We got to ask you about this weekend's UFC. Obviously, you've been keeping up on everything. Obviously.
A bit. I'm more interested in the business than the fights at the moment.
But how do you think the Dustin Poirier Conor McGregor rematch is going to go?
I think McGregor will win
easily.
I don't know. I can't tell. I can't tell. McGregor can surprise people. You know, he was. His first fight against Diaz was like already getting down on the level, you know, and that happens because if you're lightweight, you got 6-7 years to go. If you're heavyweight, you got 12 to 15 years to go.
That's right.
With a few exceptions, of course. The way, you know, for me, I questioned always like the second fight of McGregor against Diaz, because he lost the first one so easily.
Yep.
And then it looked like me that Diaz gave away the fight. So we can never know. We can never tell.
It looked that way. Okay. It looked that way to me as well. Okay. I think there's a couple opportunities Diaz had to submit him earlier he didn't take.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe say like, listen, if you skip this one, it's 5,000, you know, maybe, I don't know. we can't, but to me, I've seen a lot of fights and you know, it's like, okay, fine. And maybe it's fine with me also.
Oh, speaking of that, are you still friends with Orlando Veed?
Yeah, yeah.
You guys are buddies?
No, buddies, because we don't see each other, or when we meet to speak and we say hello and on the internet and wish each other's best once in a while. You know, it's in the week prior to the fight, you know, we took the same bus, we went to the training together, you know, we stayed in the same area, you know.
Yeah.
Mm. It's okay. When it's fight, it's fight. And then, yeah, that night I was the luckier one.
I wouldn't say luck. I would not say luck.
I don't know. It's skill, you know. You have to be, you know, I don't know.
It's cool. As brutal as people may look at it, it's cool that you can remain professional and friendly afterwards, right? Once it's done, it's done.
I, at the end of the day, it's sports. If you go back to the question of Orlando Witt, and you know, it's called being professional. You know, and Orlando is a straight up guy, and you know, he didn't cheat like someone else did. We don't mention his name.
We're not going to mention any names. We're not going to mention any names.
His name, Marco Ruas. So you know, and we both knew that we took a risk.
Oh yeah,
because it's tough, you know. But the next day we went to the mountains. And, you know, we went out for a day altogether.
We got a few fun questions for you.
Okay.
So it's basically a game, and it's kind of like know your profile kind of deal. So it's questions about you.
Oh, that's right? Better.
Some of them, I must confess, there is a one hard question, which I'm almost really interested to hear your answer. It'd be question number four, a bit of a heads up. So it's five questions.
So after three questions, the one goes up.
That's right.
But we give you a bonus question as well. So essentially, you can get 10 out of 5 and just blow us out of the water.
Okay.
All right. Question number one. In UFC 2, your first opponent that night was Alberto Sierra Leone. How did you beat him?
In three phases by a armbar, 54.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. One for one. But here's your bonus question. What round did you win in?
First round.
There you go. Damn.
All right. I got the points.
All right.
It was the third attempt also. The first one was good. This is really messed up. I had it the first time because I never fought no rules because it didn't exist. This is odd. You know, that's a tap. And I, leave it. I got to do the other arm. So I took the other arm and I really cranked it. And I really,
oh, you hear the snap. Man,
it didn't snap. It made some noise. And he didn't tap, and he was like sure at me. He's like, okay, what the hell? Go back to the first time. And then, then because at night he had to wear two Mitellas because he couldn't move his arms anymore because we were really, really messed up at that time. But he wouldn't give up. This guy had a heart.
Yeah, he refused.
Jesus
to tap.
Christ, he refused. And maybe he didn't know how to tap because he didn't know because of Patrick Silat. Yeah.
He didn't know that was an option.
Maybe not. You never know. Maybe his English was that well. You know, I was like, man, it was like to me it was like a confusing fight because it's like the crowd, the people. You know, it's 4,000 people in a place, 1,000 people. You know, a lot of noise. You know, I fought judo tournaments. Regionals, you know, in a hillbilly hall with 25 people in it, you know, that's it.
That's right. Very, very quiet. Very quiet. Yeah. And your opponent knows to tap right away, right?
Yeah.
A hillbilly hall.
Yeah. I'm from farmland. Eh? I'm from the south. So we got a lot of hillbilly shit in my region.
My father's from Breda. So I know what you're talking about.
Breda. There you go. I live 40 minutes from Breda.
Oh, yeah.
Breda's big town.
Oh, Bredar's big, eh?
Yeah, there it goes. 100,000 people is a big town. Oh. Good town. Right. Not a great fighters from Bredar, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No, I know.
Yeah.
All right. Question number two. Okay. Yeah. Overall, in your MMA career, you have a winning record. How many of those wins were by submission?
Sure, Doc. 80%.
Can I get a number? Five?
Oh, my submission. The wins. Seven?
Close. It was six.
Fuck.
But here's your bonus one. Here's what we have a bonus.
Yeah.
Name two fighters.
Yeah.
Name two fighters you tapped. So who you beat by submission?
Ooh, Alan de Witt and the guy Parker.
Yeah, there you go. Yep, there you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good guy.
Yeah. Question three. According to your UFC profile, or your MMA profile, I should say, you have a mini rivalry with John Dixon, who you beat twice.
Yep.
What events did you beat him in?
To handle a karate jiu-jitsu tournament.
Yep, it's exactly it.
Yeah. He was one of the guys. I love him. I love to death. you meet once in your life a guy.
Yeah.
Which say, listen, if he puts his right foot in front and he punches with left, I will get. And he did that with me all the time. So whatever he did, it was right in my alley.
So he had a hole. He had a hole in his game that you could exploit every time.
Every single moment. And this guy was tough as nails because he fought it. Look at his videos. He fought it in Russia. Mm-hmm. Man, it was like really, 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 really tough. But with me, he couldn't hit me one way or the other. Maybe slapped me in the face, you know, but he couldn't hit me. And after when he did something, he was like kind of hugging me. I could throw him. So I was like, okay, boom, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Tough guy. But there's that one guy. Thank you for mentioning this one because it brings back good memories. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Okay, this is good. Yeah.
The bonus question, though, for this. Name the exact date either of those events took place.
One is 1999.
Yep,
November.
That's it. Oh, my God. November 27th. God, Jesus.
Yeah,
That's how much he enjoyed beating that guy.
No, because I broke my leg in November, October 96. I came back in 98, so I was 2 years out. And then I had Saturday, the tournament with Dixon.
Yep.
And Sunday, I won the Europeans in sports jiu-jitsu.
Nice.
For me, that was the most special weekend in my life, to be honest.
Right on. Right on.
Good. Yeah. Good.
I hope that's not a question, Justin.
No.
No. Shit.
Question four. This one was a doozy. Okay.
Okay.
Since mid-2000s, gis have been banned from the UFC. Yeah. Which event was the last time a gi could legally be worn in combat?
Ooh. After UFC 8, 7 and 8 was gay, and then it was like 10 or 11 when they started the rounds, because then also didn't allow the gis. 9 knots. Should be 10. UFC 10.
So according to my research, it was UFC 27 was the last time a gi was allowed to be used. Yeah.
That late?
Oh, wow. That late.
And then bonus, what was the exact
I thought it was after the tournament, because you had a tournament
for the
and
banning
one more?
Of gis under the unified rules.
Under
the unified rules of MMA.
I think it had to do with boxing commissions to get approval nationwide.
Yeah,
that,
that's
set the rules.
I was going to say, yeah, because under the commission, they said that gis were used as weapons.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, cool. Yeah. So you're exactly correct.
Yeah.
All right. This guy's on fire.
No.
Last question.
Yeah.
With COVID impacting the world, UFC has had to move their events to a safer location. Where has the most recent event taken place?
Abu Dhabi.
Right. Bonus question. When was the UFC's last time in Netherlands?
Was Ahoy 3 years ago. 3 or 4 years. 3 or 4 years. I'll go 4 years. 4 years ago.
Exactly. 2017.
Already. Yeah.
Whew. Yeah. This guy's
boom. 8 of 10. 8 of 10.
Okay, there you go. Nothing bad there for an old guy.
Hey, Justin Williams here. Thank you for listening to our segment thus far. If you want to hear more or receive exclusive detailed information, don't forget to follow us on our social medias, such as Instagram at pro.sports.podcasters. You can also get directly involved with us through messaging. See you later.
No, come on, Justin. Let's talk some Bundesliga. Let's go.
All right, then. So just a quick little recap. The table for the Bundesliga, we still have Bayern Munich up top. We got RPL second, Leverkusen, and Dortmund. the usual suspects for the most part. Leverkusen this year, though, they've been on a bit of a downslide, but they started off the year really good on a tear. I'm not going to lie, I expected them to be a little more upper mid-table, not sitting comfortably at three, but they're above Dortmund by 3 points. That's better than I expected. Dortmund's had its miscarriages for players and injuries and COVID testing, so I don't know. It's a weird time over in Europe right now. And the bottom three for the Bundesliga coming up, FC Cologne, it sucks because Cologne is that team that's always like too good for tier two, but not good enough for tier one, so they're always in that kind of dynamic. Mainz and then Schalke. I don't know what's happened to Schalke, but they're just pooping the bed left, right, and center. But anyways, with that information in mind, I do have predictions for next week's matches. Easiest one, Bayern versus Schalke. Top versus bottom. You're going to want to stick with Bayern on this one. That's how confident I am in this one.
Over, under two goals.
Over, easily. Easily. I would even put over three if you're being really optimistic about it. And then second easiest pick for this would be number two versus number two from the bottom, which is RPL and Mainz. Like, this week is pretty much a gimme for everything.
Sounds like March Madness.
Literally, right? So you're going to want to bet on RPL for that one. I'd say about two goals. You could also maybe bet three. You might do all right, but I wouldn't get too confident with it on that. And my last pick against Hoffenheim versus Cologne. Now remember, Hoffenheim does have a good team. They actually beat Bayern 5-0. It was disgusting and horrible. However, they've been on a bit of a pooping streak, and they're also mid-table, sitting comfortably at 11. If you can, depending what betting app source you use, for that, just to be safe, I would bet draw and Hoffenheim. You're gonna make less money, but I can't see Cologne putting anything up, and if they do, it's probably an own goal, which is what will lead to the draw. Those are my three bets. But if you join our Patreon, you will hear all my bets for every match.
And something our fans should know is that if we tell you to make a bet, we ourselves will make that bet. So we're not just going out on a limb and gambling with your money, but we'll gamble with our own to prove that we stand by what we say. For those of you on Facebook, don't forget to check out our Pro Sports Podcasters page, as well as the Pro Sports Podcasters group if you're interested in finding out up-to-date information on our most recent podcast, plus additional information you can ask us directly using Facebook as the medium.
And what do we have going on in the world of golf, Kobe?
Well, this week I've got three predictions for you, and I'm not going to go into detail here because I cover the PGA and LPGA in depth on my Kobe Life YouTube channel. But if you want to find out every little bit of betting information I've got, you're going to want to sign up on our Patreon site, because that's where we give you every single bet we place each and every week in every single sport. But instead, I'm just going to give you my picks to win each tournament this week. And my pick to win the PGA American Express Career Builder Challenge is 2020 Rookie of the Year Scottie Scheffler. Now, he's been playing some fantastic golf for a year now and is still looking for his first win. I think he's got a chance to get it done this week. Now, my pick to win the LPGA Diamond Resorts Tournament of Champions is Brooke Henderson, and she closed out 2020 with a handful of top 10 finishes, but didn't get the win. I believe the drought ends this week. And lastly, as a bonus, this is something I don't usually cover, even on my Kobe Life YouTube channel, but I'm going to make my pick to win the European Tour HSBC Tournament in Abu Dhabi, and I'm going with Rory McIlroy. He didn't get the win in 2020, but his game was coming into form at the end of the year, and Rory has had success in Abu Dhabi before. He's actually been the runner-up at this particular tournament 4 times, so it's time for him to get the victory.
I agree.
Those are my picks. For more in-depth golf info, sign up to the Pro Sports Podcasters Patreon site and get more incredible information and help us support this show.